The greatest story ever told is a true story. It is a story of adventures, battles, kings and queens, heroes and villains, good and evil, history and prophecy. It is your story. Come join the adventure of the Bible story.
Chapter 211. The first church era comes to a close. Paul woke up before dawn, and though he had grown older, immediately got out of bed. He was excited because he knew this was going to be a great day. He got on his knees and began to pray. He thanked God for all the many blessings and trials that he had been given during all the years he had been serving Jesus Christ. He even thanked God that he was under house arrest in Rome.
"Even this didn't stop me from doing Christ's work,"
he thought as he prayed. Paul remembered what Jesus had told him when he was saved by the Romans from the rioting Jews in Jerusalem.
"You have given your witness for me here in Jerusalem, and you must also do the same in Rome."
Paul thanked God for this encouragement. He was excited by what he had accomplished in Rome during his short 2 years there.
"I wanted to come to Rome for about 7 years,"
Paul thought as he prayed.
"I knew so many of the disciples already living in Rome needed to be strengthened in the faith."
He thought about the letter he had sent to his beloved Romans years before.
"I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who live in Rome,"
he had written. Then he thanked God that he had been permitted to establish the church at Rome from his own house.
"Now, today, this very day, I will be set free to move among God's people in Rome,"
he gratefully prayed. Paul was eager to visit Aquila and Priscilla in their own home. In his letter to the Romans, he had written,
"I send greetings to Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in the service of Christ Jesus. They risked their lives for me. I am grateful to them, not only I, but all the Gentile churches as well. Greetings also to the church that meets in their house."
Now Paul could shower this dedicated couple with personal affection. He thanked God for all the new converts in Rome who had been added to the church.
"Christ had even called some of the emperor's staff,"
Paul thought, his heart filled with joy. He thanked Jesus Christ for these accomplishments in Rome. He knew without doubt that his Lord and Master had carefully organized all the events he had experienced in his life. He knew that being set free meant there was more Jesus Christ wanted done. Paul remembered writing the Romans about his desire to visit Spain.
"Is it time now to plan this trip?"
he wondered. He asked Christ to open the door for him to carry his message beyond Rome. Then came a knock at Paul's door. He quickly ended his prayer and stood up. When he opened the door, he was pleasantly surprised.
"I just wanted to say goodbye and wish you well,"
said the Roman soldier who had been stationed at his house.
"I am happy that you can be set free."
None of Paul's enemies in Jerusalem had come to Rome to present their accusations against him. So according to Roman law, the officials were required to set him free.
"I know that you are a law-abiding Roman citizen and that you are unjustly accused,"
the soldier affirmed.
"Thank you so much,"
responded Paul sincerely. The two had become good friends.
"You provided me with the protection I needed. I deeply appreciate all the kindness you showed me while I was imprisoned."
The soldier extended his hand to Paul, and the two embraced warmly. Then the soldier turned and walked away. As Paul watched him leave, the thought came into his mind to contact Aristobulus and begin planning a journey to Spain. Paul walked briskly to Aristobulus' house. He was happy to be walking the streets of Rome unescorted. He was not looking at the beautifully designed buildings. Rather, he mulled over his future in doing God's work. As he walked, his thoughts deepened.
I know my job is to spread the message about Jesus Christ,
he thought.
But where do I go next?
He recalled the day Ananias had come to him in Damascus. Ananias had told Paul what Christ had said concerning his mission.
Go, because I have chosen him to serve me, to make my name known to the Gentiles and kings and to the people of Israel.
He would never forget those words.
I have gone to the Gentiles,
he mused.
I have gone before kings. And from Rome, I suspect I must now go to Israel, specifically the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
Paul had no doubt that Christ would soon reveal what to do next. Approaching Aristobulus's house, he thought about the large number of helpers Christ had provided him. He knew that this dedicated servant would have some helpful suggestions for him. After a warm greeting, the two men sat down to plan Paul's next journey.
Do you remember the letter I wrote to you, brethren, here in Rome?
Paul asked.
Yes, sir, I do.
Aristobulus responded.
Do you remember that at that time I wanted to go to Spain?
Paul asked. Aristobulus nodded.
I would like to plan my trip to Spain and leave as soon as possible.
Paul stated.
And after Spain?
He added quickly.
I would like to go to the British Isles.
Aristobulus smiled.
It is always exciting to work with one of God's apostles,
he thought. Paul did travel to Spain and also spent time in the British Isles. During this time, Paul wrote more letters that were canonized, including Titus, 1 Timothy, and Hebrews. Around AD 66, Emperor Nero imprisoned Paul in Rome for a second time. This is when he wrote 2 Timothy, his last letter. God had commissioned Peter, the chief apostle, to oversee carrying the gospel to the 10 lost tribes of the house of Israel and the Jews. This commission took Peter north and west of Jerusalem, even to the British Isles. The other 11 apostles assisted Peter in taking the gospel to the 10 tribes. Andrew went to northern Asia Minor and worked in the area of the Black Sea and Crimea. John worked in the eastern Mediterranean region. Philip worked in Scythia and Gaul, France. Matthew also worked in Scythia and Ethiopia. Bartholomew went to Cilicia, Armenia, and around the Caspian Sea. Thomas went into the Iranian plateau and possibly as far as India. Thaddeus went into the upper Mesopotamian regions and Assyria. Matthias went into Macedonia, Dacia, and Central Europe. James Alpheus went into Spain, Britain, and Ireland. Simon the Zealot went into North Africa and Britain. The dangerous and difficult work of the apostles got results. Churches of God were established throughout the known world. Yet as positive as these developments were, the growth of the first century church stopped within 30 years of its beginning. The number one problem in this era, called the Ephesus era, was that God's people lost their first love. When they heard God's truth, they began to think, "Yeah, I've heard that before. I already get that." But their spiritual understanding wasn't nearly as strong as they thought. This era had started with great power. Fueling its power was the love of the truth. Paul's life was a perfect picture of that. This love assisted the members in disproving false apostles and false leaders. However, the Ephesus era lost that love. Soon, the church fell prey to many false ministers. In AD 45, during the reign of Claudius Caesar, Simon Magus, the magician priest whom Peter had rebuked for trying to buy the Holy Spirit, appeared in Rome. Simon actually became Claudius's spiritual advisor and good friend, even after Peter rejected him years before. This man kept trying to gain influence within the new Jewish movement. He deceitfully used the name Christian for his own movement and worked to blend religious concepts from the Old Testament and the New Christianity with the Babylonian mystery religion. Simon gained followers and developed a group of leaders. He teamed up with a prostitute named Helen. Borrowing a Christian vocabulary, he taught that he was the Son of God to the Jews and Father to the Samaritans. He also taught that Helen was the mother of all things. He taught that he had created the angels. While in Rome, Simon Magus used his magic to win the awe and respect of Claudius, the Roman Senate, and the people. The magic he performed was more than sleight of hand, card tricks, or pulling a rabbit out of a hat. He used demonic forces to amaze people. Because he seemed to have spiritual power, people began to worship him as a god. Even Claudius honored him with a statue. He became known as Simon Peter. In the pagan religion of Rome, the name Peter was used for certain gods and idolatrous objects of worship. Simon Magus became a confusing counterfeit of the true apostle Simon Peter, whom Christ had put in charge of the church he founded. Satan used Simon Magus to set up a counterfeit version within his false church of the governmental structure Christ had established. Simon's movement grew in numbers and popularity. Using his influence gained at Rome, he wanted to infiltrate and gain power over the true church of God. Dark days were coming on God's church. Storm clouds were looming over Judah and Rome, and the years AD 60 through 70 proved to be turbulent. Nero had ascended to power in Rome at age 17. He was the fifth emperor. It was rumored that his mother, Agrippina, had poisoned Claudius so her son could rule the empire. But when she complained about her son's mistress, Nero killed her. Nero was an inhumane, insane egomaniac. In AD 64, Rome burned to the ground. For 9 days and nights, a great fire raced through the capital city. Thousands of terror-stricken Romans were left homeless. The fire reduced the most heavily populated areas of the city to rubble and ash. There were whisperings that Nero had set the fire himself because he desired to rebuild the city to an even greater glory. A rebuilt, more glorious Rome would immortalize his name. The gossip that Nero had burned Rome spread through the shaken city. In fear of his life, Nero blamed the fire on the Christians. The Romans believed him. Christians were already mistrusted and despised because of their beliefs. They would not worship the old Roman gods. They refused to worship the emperor as divine, which was interpreted as treason. The Christian teaching of Jesus Christ returning as King of Kings sounded like revolt. It was easy for Nero to plant the idea that the fire could be the beginning of a revolution. The mad emperor ordered the punishment of Christians for burning Rome. A full-scale persecution began. Nero personally devised some horrific tortures and executions for the falsely accused Christians. Some were crucified. Others had to fight wild animals in the Circus Maximus, and some were burned at the stake. The persecution raged for years. In the early summer of AD 68, it claimed the life of one of the greatest spiritual giants. Nero beheaded the Apostle Paul. The mad emperor buried Paul's body on the Ossian Way in Rome. Sometime later, two of God's people, the British Princess Claudia and her husband Rufus Pudens, saw to it that Paul's body was reburied in an area the British occupied in Rome, an area that stayed under British control until the Middle Ages. Nero met his own tragic end that same year. The Gallic and Spanish legions and the Praetorian Guards rose against him, and he fled the city. The Senate declared him a public enemy. Nero committed suicide on June 9, AD 68, just outside Rome. God's leading church elders in Rome were also imprisoned and slaughtered. In the following years, one by one, the original disciples who had witnessed Christ's life were martyred. There were reports that the Apostle Peter was crucified upside down in the same year as Paul. All of these deaths created a huge void in the upper level of leadership of the church. The Jerusalem church could do very little to help the congregation at Rome. Jerusalem was in disarray. In AD 66, Jewish rebels defied the Roman government in Palestine. A general revolt erupted. In the spring of AD 69, the Roman general Titus swept from east of Jordan into Judea. Jerusalem was surrounded by armies. Heeding Christ's warning, the people of God in Judea fled northeast to the city of Pella. This was a first century fulfillment of Luke 21, verses 20 to 21. Located in the Gilead Mountains east of the Jordan River, Pella was a safe haven for God's little flock. In AD 70, Titus conquered Jerusalem. His siege of the city was barbaric. Many people died of starvation. Before the siege was over, food had grown so scarce that people were eating from the bodies of the dead. Once inside the city, Titus oversaw the slaughter of many people. He burned the temple to the ground and laid the city waste. In all, some 600,000 people were butchered. Meanwhile, false teachers were creeping into the church and causing serious problems. The early church had been infiltrated and virtually destroyed by these deceitful ministers. However, Christ had not forsaken his church. The Apostle John, the last survivor of the original 12 apostles, was still alive. Through all the persecution, John kept working. The original 12 apostles had been trained by Jesus himself. Christ had an important job for them. However, he spent a lot of time with John in particular, night after night, preparing him for a very special work, a critical role in the church at the end of the first century. John saw terrifying things happening to God's people. Persecution was doing great damage to the church, and many members were falling away. The Roman Empire had a lot of power, and its false Christianity begun by Simon Magus, grew. Under Satan's influence, people were blotting out the history of God's church. The Apostle John was battling that great satanic conspiracy. He knew that the teachings of Christ were being corrupted by a plot to destroy the truth. He was fighting these enemies of the truth by working to warn and strengthen God's faithful people. He was answering all the questions God's people had, referring back to what Christ taught him. Jesus Christ had told him what was coming and what he would have to do to help God's people. John also fought to preserve the church's history. Around AD 90, amid intense persecution against the church, Roman Emperor Domitian imprisoned the Apostle John on the island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea. He had been arrested and exiled for preaching God's message and that Jesus Christ would eventually overthrow the Roman government. While on Patmos, John tried to maintain care of the churches. It was difficult. The only way he could communicate was by personal messenger or by letter. It was during this time that John finished writing his gospel account of Jesus Christ's life, as well as his three epistles that had been preserved in the Bible. John wrote his gospel to help the people ward off deception, and he filled his epistles with specific information regarding the conspiracy to overthrow the truth. John's writings were invaluable for a church struggling to survive. Despite John's efforts, however, God's church was in grave danger. Only a few loyal ministers could be trusted. Some ministers had rejected John's authority. In one letter, John revealed that one apostate minister was even casting true Christians out of the church. His name was Diotrephes. He hated the people who followed John. Those who did want John to be in authority were put out of the church. In the midst of this severe church crisis, God wouldn't allow John to go where many of the brethren were while they were also being severely tested. God essentially said to each member, "You've had all this precious knowledge that John has given you. Now apply it, and everything will work out. Will you stand with me? I want you to take a stand for me." God often tests his people and gives challenges that will build character and leadership. All the trials and persecution John endured during this time would leave almost any person somewhat shaken. Yet he had a wonderful, extremely inspiring attitude. And while he was on the tiny island of Patmos, God the Father revealed specific prophetic visions to him through Jesus Christ. God inspired John to write the book of Revelation to conclude the Bible. He gave John magnificent visions of end-time events, which John faithfully recorded for our benefit. They include prophecy of the development of God's true church, a vision of God's throne room, an event surrounding the Great Tribulation, a period of intense suffering in the world at the end of man's era of rule on earth. They also picture Jesus Christ's second coming and the end of the kingdoms of this world. They describe Satan being bound, the resurrection of the saints, their rule during the millennium, and the second resurrection and great white throne judgment. The book of these prophecies concludes with a spectacular vision of New Jerusalem and the time in the future when God the Father will establish his home on earth as the headquarters temple of the entire universe. It even describes the Tree of Life being made available to all peoples of all nations, pointing back to the earliest chapters of the Bible when God offered that tree to the first human beings and then cut them off from it after their rebellion. The story of the Bible concludes with God saying that the prophecy of the book of Revelation should not be subtracted from nor added to. John was released from Patmos around AD 96. He finished his final years at Ephesus. Near the end of his life, John worked hard to strengthen the members and encourage them to remain steadfast in the truth. He saw to the training of some very effective leaders. He and the others soon understood that Christ would not return in their lifetime. John lived to be an old man. His death around AD 100 signaled the end of the Ephesus era. But the church did not die. It survived as Christ had promised. The faithful men whom John trained kept the truth alive. As John wrote in Revelation 2 and 3, the church would endure through six more eras. God made sure that the Bible, which John concluded with the book of Revelation, would be preserved. It had been written over a period of about 1,600 years by about 40 different authors from every walk of life. Kings, generals, fishermen, herdsmen, philosophers, tax collectors, tent makers, in the wilderness, in dungeons and prisons, in palaces, on three different continents, and in three different languages. Yet the story it tells is perfectly cohesive and consistent. That's because its real author is God. He inspired all those different writers, but it is He Himself who is speaking in its pages. All of it is inspired by God. It is far more than just a story. It is all beneficial for your instruction, correction, and guidance in life. It is a priceless gift from your Heavenly Father. Thank Him for it. Learn all you can about it. Use it and love it. Thank you for joining the Adventures of the Bible Story. Find past episodes under the Resources tab at pcg.church.